Welcome back. You're listening to From a Stranger to a Stranger. Today is the third of Rabi al-Awwal in the Islamic year of 1442, which corresponds to October 20th, 2020. So today, here in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities greater metropolitan area, we had snow. Before recording this just now, I shoveled probably like 6 inches of snow, maybe it did. Just the walkway into the garage here. So that's interesting. I am not a fan of this weather. Yeah, that kind of stinks. It's looks like it's supposed to be in the mid 30s to 40 in the next couple days. So at least it's not cold, but and the snow will probably melt away. But still, it's not my thing. I prefer warmer weather, and I'm only here in Minnesota because my wife's from here. So I think we don't plan to remain here, like when we get close to retiring or whatever, or if we can find a way to move south sooner, and that would be mainly our day jobs, or something that can sustain living, we would move out of here for warmer weather. I'm originally from Pennsylvania, and we have snow and stuff there. And on the East Coast, the Northeast, it gets cold and gets snowy. But here, it's not as cold as here, ever. Here, it's probably, on average, 20 to 30 degrees colder in the winter than it is there. So, it kind of stinks, because it can be cold, and I'm not a fan of it. And plus, here, we're pretty far north. You can't really tell that on just a map of the U.S., but we are farther north than Philly. We're probably in line with Montreal. That's, I think, how far north we are. So, you know, we do get it, and then we get this dip down from Canada, which stinks. So I was hoping that it would be warm like this winter, and maybe it will be. It feels warm out. I mean, it is the temperature where I'm at here. It's saying 4 Celsius, so it's above freezing a bit. So, whatever, it just stinks. I'm not ready for snow, and I'm not ready for cold, and it's only October. You know, technically winter does not start for 2 more months, but here we are, feeling winter here. So, yesterday I had mentioned this concept that that prophets weren't real people. And I heard this a couple years ago. I heard it in regards to prophets, like the biblical prophets. I believe it was Moses that I first heard it. People were saying, and I believe it was even Jews were saying, like probably some sort of modern take on Judaism type of Jews, were saying that Moses most likely wasn't a real person, and instead it's like the mesh of a bunch of figures at the time and ideas to create this Moses person. So I have issues with this. Growing up, I was raised as a Christian. I was specifically raised as Catholic and had gone to Catholic school and did all the types of things associated with that. And so I was obviously taught about prophets and everything. So I had never thought the idea that these people weren't real never really crossed my mind. And I'm not saying that as I just blindly believe that, you know, whatever the Catholic school and the church was telling me. But I had no reason to think they weren't. And historically, outside of religion, these are well-known famous figures, you know, so I didn't think anything of it, really. And even now, even as an adult, it never crossed my mind that these people would be fake or not real or didn't exist. Particularly, now I can see, you know, how far back you go. You know, it's possible to come up with this, but we have, like I mentioned yesterday, we even though someone mentioned if Prophet Muhammad was real, I mean, the mass general consensus, I don't know anyone who would say that he wasn't a real figure, let's put it that way, except these idiots on comments who leave comments and come up with these theories. So one thing that makes Prophet Muhammad different is that we have his grave, and it's been maintained since he died. So, well, we have graves of other prophets, or that we believe they were prophets. I don't believe that those grave sites are pretty much confirmed in the way that Prophet Muhammad's grave is. Like, for example, I believe Abraham's grave is in Jerusalem, and it's just would be interesting that if that was his real grave. You know, I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but it would be interesting where it's located there. So I can see that that kind of going in like lore, like this is supposedly Abraham's grave. Particularly, there's other prophets that have graves, and ironically, they're all in Muslim countries. So it makes sense given where the prophets lived and prophesized. But it's, to me, interesting that these aren't Christian countries. So the lands where these prophets were, those people accepted Islam ultimately as the religion of the land, which leads into the Islamic concept that all the prophets throughout history taught Islam. You know, well, we came to call it Islam in the 7th century. The foundation of Islamic monotheism was the message that all the prophets had taught. So when the people, you know, in these other lands, like the remnants of these prophets' followers, you know, recognized Islam, you know, they recognized it to be the same message that ultimately their prophet was calling to. And perhaps even those prophets, in Islam, we believe all the prophets did this. So there's no perhaps. I'm saying perhaps in a, I guess, non-religious mind, like a secular mindset now I'm speaking. In Islam, we believe all the prophets did this, but I know if you're not Muslim, you probably wouldn't believe this. And that is that those prophets prophesized the coming of the final prophet, which is Prophet Muhammad. So you know, if you were an ancient follower and you passed this down to your family and family, and when it came to the 7th century and or shortly thereafter, Islam began to spread, you would recognize this. And we know people in that time period were expecting a prophet to come. That's why the Jews were migrating in Mecca and the surrounding area, because they were expecting another prophet to come from that region, you know. So the people were expecting this. Now you can argue that they weren't or whatever, but you know, it's one opinion or the other, I guess. So I had heard the Moses thing, right? And I found this to be just kind of ridiculous too, because of the events and the grand scale of Moses. Now, you can use that as an argument against it, like against a counterpoint or a counterargument to what I'm saying. But I just don't really buy that he could not have existed. And it's because, here's the reason why, I guess. If Moses was a singular person in history, and he didn't, say he was a prophet, but didn't have like such a massive following, maybe just had like a village of people follow him, and then he died, and eventually the remnants of those followers in the village died, he would be more like a local, he would be more like a legendary figure from people outside of the village, you know, that might have been like generations later, might be like, oh yeah, there was a man who lived over there, and this is blah, 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 blah. But with Moses, that's not the case, because of the Israelites. So you have, you know, the 12 tribes basically existing, you know, till this day, you know, or the descendants and everything, you know. So, you know, that's like what I was saying in yesterday. It's that you're ultimately saying that at some point in your family lineage, this person did not exist. Which, I mean, you can say whatever, and it's easy to say, or for Moses, because we don't have a grave for Moses, so it's easy to say that. It gets harder to say with Jesus, because, you know, there's a lot of, like, we have, like, a lot of writings about him. I guess we'll just leave it at that. And so it becomes hard to say that he didn't exist. Now, we can say, did certain events happen, you know, the way they supposedly happened or whatever? That's something, you know, you can argue or debate. But the fact that he existed, you know, is, I don't know anyone who would sincerely consider that he did not. So then we have to the last prophet, right? And that's Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and peace be upon all of them, Jesus and Moses and Abraham and everyone. So we have Prophet Muhammad, and this man on this internet comment said, if he even existed, right? So he's holding the opinion that he didn't exist, clearly, if he said that and what his comment was about. But let's talk a little bit about evidence, I guess, that he did exist. And that's the number one evidence, I would say, would be his grave. Where Prophet Muhammad is buried is in the spot that he died. So, which, if you think about it, is a, you know, ingenious thing to do to him, you know, given what Muslims believe, that he was a prophet and all the events of his life. And if he's a prophet, where, you know, where would you take a prophet to be buried? Or where would you take him to be buried, you know? And, you know, you can play this type of, this is how I think about it, and that is the understanding that Allah decreed for him to die on that spot, right? So why wouldn't you bury him on that spot? And it's kind of like for anyone I think about, you know, like now when you think about it, and if you think that there is like some sort of destiny or decree or will, overall will, even if you claim it to be like, well, the universe decided this, you know, how people use this type of phrase, and you died in your backyard, you know, isn't there something to the spot that we die on, you know? If we die in a manner where we die, like, not via, like, a car crash or something like this, you know. So, you know, it's interesting in that they did bury him where he died. So where that happened to be was in Aisha's house, right? So he got buried there. And ultimately when Abu Bakr died, who was the following caliph of the Muslims after Prophet Muhammad died, he was buried next to Prophet Muhammad. And then Omar, who was the next leader, was buried there as well. And both Abu Bakr and Umar were very probably like the closest companions to Prophet Muhammad. Him were these men. So they're buried there as well. So her house, right, Aisha's house is, or the room that he died in. Now you got to think, right? So these houses are tiny, right? I mean, they're like one room type of house, and they're not very big. Right, so you're talking the 7th century here. So her house is still standing. So what they did was they, where his grave is in Medina. And so he died in Aisha's room. And they buried him there. So he had... So he's in her bedroom. So the house is still there. It's enclosed now, so you can't go in it or anything. But it's completely surrounded. And later in history, this is something interesting, which lends to... Okay, so we have him that he died, right? And her house is there. They left it like that up until this day. So that's like an... something that says, okay, this person existed, right? The grave is there, a grave. You have a grave, right? And not only of one person, you have graves of three historical people, right? And that's the thing. Like when you say, well, Prophet Muhammad didn't exist, well then what about all the people that saw him and spoke to him and talk about him? You know, so they are just making that up. You know, that's kind of like the claim, then, if you're claiming he didn't exist. I didn't even bother to look, to be honest, about what the, like, rationale or why this idea existed, or who was Prophet Muhammad then? You know, who was this person? Was it just like a bunch of people writing about this, or, you know, whatever, who this was? I didn't go into that because I just found it kind of idiotic that you would make that claim anyway. So we have his grave. Years later, in the year 1174, the man, the leader of the Muslims at that time, his name was Zengi. His name was Nuruddin Zengi. He had an underground wall built, like a chamber around the graves, and filled with molten lead, because during that time period and prior to him, they were trying to steal the body of Prophet Muhammad by digging tunnels towards the graves. So Sultan Nuruddin Zengi, you know, built this chamber around the house, and he filled it with molten lead to stop this, you know. So, and in that time, my point to this is in that time period, they still believe that Prophet Muhammad was buried there, you know. And you can say, well, we still believe it too, but, you know, as you get closer to the events with things that happened, those things are harder to disprove. For example, if someone you knew died this today or tomorrow or yesterday or whatever, you know, and you're talking about them to your kid or something, it's less likely that you're, it's not going to be a lie or being made up, because you're direct source, you know. And like the dad to can take the kid to the grave and be like, oh, this is where he's buried and blah, blah, blah. So there's that, which happened in the 12th century, right? Sorry, so I just looked up, was Muhammad real, right? So I went to see what was actually said about this. So I found this article. It's a Wall Street Journal article. It's from November 15, 2008. And here we are, like a Muslim, no less, is promoting this theory, right? In Munster, Germany, Mohammed Sven Kalisch, a Muslim convert and Germany's first professor of Islamic theology, fast during the Muslim holy month, doesn't like to shake hands with Muslim women, and has spent years studying Islamic scripture, Islam, he says, guides his life. So it came as something of a surprise when Professor Kalisch announced the fruit of his theological research. His conclusion, the Prophet Muhammad probably never existed. So here we go. Muslims, not surprisingly, are outraged. Even Danish cartoonists who triggered global protests a couple of years ago didn't portray the prophet as fictional. German police, worried about a violent backlash, told the professors to move his religious studies center to more secure premises. And he goes on... about this, and there's another professor that kind of like backs him. Let's see where I can find out what he says. The article is not very long, so you can Google it, but I don't really feel like reading the like political type of thing that's going on in the beginning of the article. Professor Kalisch, who insists he's still a Muslim, I don't know how that can be if you're denying this, I guess, but a Muslim in a, you can be Muslim in a sense that you are a person who submits to the will of Allah. Yes, you can be a Muslim in that way. In a Muslim in the greater idea of how the totality of Islam, in the sense that you would have to believe in Prophet Muhammad. And that's actually the first thing that you do in Islam is state your belief in one God and that Muhammad was his final messenger, his last and final messenger. So, yeah, that's what he had to say. So who insists he's still a Muslim says he knew he would get in trouble but wanted to subject Islam to the same scrutiny as Christianity and Judaism. German scholars of the 19th century, he notes, were among the first to raise questions about the historical accuracy of the Bible. So this kind of goes into like what I was saying, right? You're scrutinizing the Bible, but the Bible and just the things in the Bible, in the sense of the prophets, don't have the same amount of documentation in, even if it's oral, you know, oral history, but physical things, you know, and as I said, the aspect of the grave with two other historical figures in the grave with them or next to them exists, and there's no disputing amongst Muslims and non-Muslims through history that this existed. And this is where his grave is quite a big point to me. But I guess you can argue that it isn't either. Many scholars of Islam, this is the next paragraph, question the accuracy of ancient sources on Muhammad's life. The earliest biography, of which no copies survive, dated from roughly a century after the generally accepted year of his death, 632, and is known only by references in much later texts, but only a few scholars have doubted Muhammad's existence. Most say his life is better documented than that of Jesus. And so here I'm going on, you know, this kind of like reinforces the point I'm making. And you can say, well, it doesn't, and if you're comparing him to Jesus here, just I'm going to say this, because typically when you say something like this, like people like are outraged when you say that Muhammad's life is better documented than Jesus. What we know of Jesus is really only from a 3-year period in his life, where Muhammad, we know 20 years, we know more than 20 years, like his, but we have his prophethood being the last, you know, 20 years of his life. I mean, we know events prior to that too, which are historical events as well. But we have actual hadith, which are normally said they're the sayings of Prophet Muhammad, but it's how they are recorded is by on the account, like for example, a hadith might be like on the account of so and so. On the account of so-and-so, then so-and-so, then so-and-so said Muhammad, or Muhammad said blah, 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 blah. So the strongest hadiths are the ones that only have, like, one person or two person in the chain, you know? There's this. So we don't have, like, something Muhammad wrote, because what Muhammad said was the Quran, right? So we have what his followers wrote about him, you know. So the, like I said, the strongest accounts are generally like one person away. And so there's this whole science and everything of how hadith are, and it's all based on so-and-so, like people's reputation and everything, and a bunch, they're all graded like strong or weak or whatever. So this is a big, a massive, massive thing, right? And this type of thing does not exist in Christianity about Jesus. Nothing like this documentation type of system exists. And we don't have Jesus's grave either, so that's like a bad thing. Or we have what is supposedly his grave, but we don't. There was no body in it, and you know the story of Jesus. Obviously, he's not in the grave as well. So there is that. I'm just looking through here quick, trying to. Oh, here's like another genius line that he says. All the same, Professor Lagel has signed a petition in support of Professor Kalish. Professor Nagel is the other person I was talking about, who has faced blistering criticism from Muslim groups and some German scholar academics. We are in Europe, Professor Nagel says. It could be Nagel, I don't know. Education is about thinking, not just learning by heart. And here is like what I, going back to the root of evil and all this type of thing, this like is a idea, right, that really is the root of what is like bad about Western academia, in a sense. And that is that they believe, right, that they are the best and the highest like thing around, right? So you see this in other things. So what I'm saying is here, he says we are in Europe, you know what I mean? Education is not, is about thinking, not just learning by heart. So he's putting down the Middle East, you know, and or the Muslims, but we'll just say the Middle East, in this statement, you know. So that's like the arrogant or whatever you want to call it, thing about this. And you see this in other where too. Like I do a lot of things. I do historical armored combat, right? And you see this in this type of field as well, like the sword field, the field of swords and armor. if you talk to someone from Europe, generally they will believe or promote an idea that European plate mail or European armor and weapons were superior than everything else. It was like the pinnacle of development, right? So they're always like comparing it, whatever else, to that. And, you know, trying to be like, well, you know, it should be like this, you know, and it doesn't, and things aren't like that, you know. Why it can't another culture develop in their own way and that be an equally researched and developed thing? Why is it the West, right, always imposing, and here I'm Europeans, you know, imposing their, like, no, their, what they think your beliefs and ideas should be, you know, if that makes sense. You know, here they're doing it again, like, well, it's, you're wrong. You know, they're saying, like, your 1,400 years of history, the way you record history and everything is just garbage because you don't think, you just, you know, learn it by heart. Yeah. So Yeah, that's. I don't really have. I this. I don't know if there's a name for this in this context, but it. I don't like it, and I see it a lot in the hobbies that I do because they are historical based things. And this article goes on and talks about some things. Here's about him. A convert to Islam at age 15, Professor Kalish says he was drawn to the faith because it seemed more rational than others. He embraced a branch of Shia Islam noted for its skeptical bent. After working briefly as a lawyer, he began in 2001 on a postdoctoral thesis in Islamic law in Hamburg to go through the elaborate process required to become a professor in Germany. The September 11th attacks in the US that year appalled Mr. Kalish but didn't dent his devotion. Indeed, after he arrived at Munster University in 2004, he struck some as too conservative. Sami El Rabah, a scholar at a nearby college, recalls attending a lecture by Professor Kalish and being upset by his doctrinaire defense of Islamic law known as Sharia. In private, he was moving in a different direction. He devoured works questioning the existence of Abraham, Moses, and Jesus. Well, there you go. All right. So I didn't read this article. Like I said, I just looked it up. In that little pause there was back then, that was me looking it up. So here we are, like, here's this claim that these people didn't exist, you know. Then I said to myself, you've dealt with Christianity and Judaism, but what about your own religion? Can you take it for granted that Muhammad existed? He had no doubts at first, but slowly they emerged. He was struck, he says, by the fact that the first coin bearing Muhammad's name did not appear until the late 7th century, 6 decades after the religion did. So this, I mean, I don't feel that this is a bit of evidence to it because perhaps they didn't need to mint coins until that point. You know, I mean, like, I don't know. I don't really see that as an issue. I'm sure there was money in circulation. So if you look at also, well, I don't know. I don't really see that as something, but I'll continue. He traded ideas with some scholars in Saarbrücken, who in recent years have been pushing the idea of Muhammad's non-existence. They claim that Muhammad wasn't the name of a person, but a title, and that Islam began as a Christian heresy. I can see where they're getting this title part from, but I don't know how Islam could begin as a Christian heresy. But Professor Kalish didn't buy all this. Contributing last year to a book on Islam, he weighed the odds and called Muhammad's existence more probable than not. By earlier this year, though, his thinking had shifted. The more I read, the historical person at the root of the whole thing became more and more improbable. I mean, I don't buy that, obviously. I can see, though, how if you take into account like weak hadith and hadiths that from other sources and stuff, when you start to have so much stuff on him, I can see where you might say, okay, a lot of this could have been fabricated. But then again, there's the very strong hadith that you can go by, and we have the Quran too. But saying that, I read the next sentence. He has doubts too about the Quran. God doesn't write books, Professor Kalish says. So, I mean, I don't know how this guy is even thinking. Unless he's saying God doesn't write books in like a sarcastic type of way, But the Quran isn't like a book that's written, it's a recitation. So it's not like you're reading chapter one and then it's, a chronological order or something as the Bible is. It's nothing like that. Different ideas are present in the same chapter, and that's the way the flow of the ayats are move around from the past to the present to the future to the past to the present to the future. So I don't really see how. If you're using like the idea that God doesn't write books, I mean, I don't say that because even the Quran itself is like the first person, it's written in first person of God speaking, whereas the Bible and the Bible, like the Old and the New Testament, is not like that. That's people writing after the fact or second person, I guess, second hand or whatever. Some of his students voiced alarm at the direction of his teaching. I began to wonder if he would one day say he doesn't exist himself, says one. A few boycotted his lessons, others sang his praises. Professor Kalish says he never told students, just believe what Kalish thinks. But teaches them to think independently. Religions, he says, are crutches that help believers get to the spiritual truth behind them. To him, what matters isn't whether Muhammad actually lived out, but the philosophy presented in his name. But then who was that? That's what I never get here, and that's what I never got. Who was it with the evidence of non-existence? We have a lot of evidence that he existed. Where's like something to counter it? Like the coin theory? What else? What else is going on? Or then not even what else? Like who did all this? Who did all this? Because historically, this didn't exist prior to the 7th century. So in the 7th century, something happened that caused Islam to happen. So who was that person? Was it like four people, one person? I mean, if it wasn't Muhammad, then who was it? What was it? This is funny here. Germany's Muslim Coordinating Council withdrew from the advisory board of Professor Kalisch Center. Some council members refused to address him by his adopted Muslim name, Muhammad, saying that he should now be known as Sven. So, and it is ironic if his adopted Muslim name is Muhammad and now he's saying this, So it goes into talking about some other things. They're finally getting to like the last sentence, which says the professor says he's more determined than ever to keep probing his faith. He is finishing a book to explain his thoughts. It's in English instead of German because he wants to make a bigger impact. I'm convinced that what I'm doing is necessary. There must be a free discussion of Islam. There was a free discussion, right? This non-free discussion thing is actually relatively new. Maybe in the past 150 years, most likely, maybe, well, specifically in the past, I would say 50 to 70 years. But we can go back a little bit farther. I would say also to what ultimately began to cause this was probably in the 1800s, I think, is when they tried to cause some uproar and split from the Khalifa, the Ottomans the first time. So you have like Lawrence of Arabia. So, you know, you always hear of Lawrence of Arabia, but from my perspective, they like the Muslims in Lawrence of Arabia are the bad guys. So like the people that Lawrence of Arabia helps are the bad guys, you know? So it's interesting. So this was in 2008, I think it was, I said. And so that's now when I saw an article, I think it was in 2017, too. That probably goes into this further in what has developed in the, you know, 10 years since the first one was written or whatever. So maybe I'll check that out then, but this has gone on long enough, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.